Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, back from Cleveland and the Republican National Convention. And it's so nice to be back here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Was out on the Storm Center patio, slightly overcast. Maybe that will keep things a little bit cool. I don't know what it will do about getting rid of any of that humidity out of the air, though. But like I said, get out this morning and enjoy things. And, of course, remember there's also a chance that the storms will be moving back in sometime mid-afternoon. Well, joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio now is Lori Lightfoot. She's a partner at Meyer Brown, and she's an attorney for the Independent Maps Amendment Drive, one of the most prominent attorneys in the city of Chicago. Thank you, Lori, for coming in this early on a Sunday morning.
It's my pleasure to be here, Rick.
Of course, we've talked in the past about this effort to try to put on the November 8th ballot a constitutional amendment that would ask voters to change the way that the legislature's 118 House districts and 59 Senate districts change the way that they're redrawn every 10 years following the federal census, and to try to take much of the political influence out of the map-making process. The argument of supporters being that it's the lawmakers draw the maps for themselves and not for the voters. And it's a very difficult thing to put on the ballot, a citizen-driven petition initiative. And last week at the circuit court level, Judge Diane Larson ruled that she did not believe that this qualified for the November 8th ballot on constitutional grounds based on that limitation. Part of drawing up this proposed amendment was creating kind of a multifaceted, multi-phase system to arrive at getting 11 commissioners to draw the map. First, there's a process to choose applicants to review who might sit on the commission. The Auditor General was involved, those kinds of things. But truly what everything comes down to is that phrasing that the Supreme Court has used in the past, that to change the Illinois Constitution by voters can only affect the legislative articles, structural, and it has to be structural and procedural. And that's a very narrow window.
It is a very narrow window. And really what it boils down to is that it has to be something that is cabined within the particular article. You can't, for example, have a completely brand new topic that has nothing to do with the legislative article involved in a particular amendment. What the court did is to say that redistricting is a proper topic for a citizen-led initiative. She used the word fair game, quoting from a prior decision. But she placed the grounds on which a citizen's initiative could pass constitutional muster so narrowly that, frankly, in our mind, it would be virtually impossible for such an initiative to actually be successful.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to say, you know, it was a very harsh ruling. But if there was one bright light, it was the fact that she did say that certainly redistricting is structural and procedural and is fair game, citing that previous opinion, for a citizens' initiative. But to me, it would seem hard to craft, under her definition, it would be hard to craft a change to try to achieve independence from the political influence without, you know, under that strict guidelines that she placed.
Well, she recognizes the ability without any ability to make it a reality. And that, I think, lies the problem, and that's the issue that we'll be presenting to the Supreme Court. She was focused on the notion that non-legislative actors like the Auditor General, like the Supreme Court, like the Attorney General, in the way that she did her analysis, if such a citizen initiative like ours implicated the powers of any of those non-legislative state actors, then it was unconstitutional.
Other constitutional officers.
Exactly.
That affects other parts of the Constitution, and that goes beyond the scope of the legislative article.
That was her argument. We think that's clearly wrong. And beyond that, if you look at the history of the 1970 Illinois Constitutional Convention, the framers explicitly talked about the need to have a citizen-led initiative on apportionment, which is the same thing as redistricting, because they recognized that there would come a time where the legislature's own self-interest would inhibit their ability to actually make the kind of changes that were necessary. Well, the history of redistricting since 1970 clearly bears that out. We've had a lot of ties, a lot of names pulled out of hats, and the party that wins ends up gerrymandering a redistricting legislative map to favor...
And it's both sides.
It's both sides, yes. Whoever name is pulled out of the hat takes all the spoils to themselves. That clearly doesn't make sense for a whole host of reasons, not the least of which is, and I think this number is right, this fall we will have 67% of the Illinois legislators have no opposition in their general election campaigns. That makes no sense. Well, what that leads to is people feeling completely disaffected from the process, that their vote doesn't matter, because, and you've heard this phrase, I'm sure, that the legislators are choosing their voters instead of the other way around, and that it makes the party bosses and the party leaders much more powerful and makes those individual legislators much more responsive to those folks than to individual voters. If we're going to take back our democracy in Illinois, which is clearly fundamentally broken, it starts, in my view, with redistricting. We've got to give the people the power to pick their own legislators through drawing fair maps.
I always found the irony in ConCon in 1970 of coming up with the redistricting scheme, that the idea that if neither side it starts with a commission that's picked by the legislative leaders, mm-hmm. the four legislative leaders,
right.
equal members. And when they deadlock, the name is drawn out of Abraham Lincoln's hat or something for the tie-breaking member.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the whole concept of that was meant to encourage both sides to work together because of the risk was so great that it would be winner take all, that no political party would take the risk. And instead, it's the idea of the winner take all,
yep.
that the risk, the idea of winning overcomes the risk.
The rationality that was kind of baked into the process by the 1970 framers and the assumptions of rationality just haven't proven to be the case in our state. And frankly, we've seen that on the national level where there were draconian defense cuts that were put in if certain measures weren't met. Nobody thought that that would happen, but yet that's exactly what happened.
Sequestration
4 years ago. Unfortunately, not just in Illinois, but really all across our country, we live in a time where legislators can't get beyond partisan divides, can't get beyond, frankly, their own self-interest in maintaining incumbency. A lot of what this is about, and I want to make sure that this point is clear, is about protecting incumbency, whatever political hat you wear. And that defeats the interest of the average voter, of citizens, to be able to have a legislature or an individual legislator that is truly responsive to the needs of their community. We have too many districts that aren't competitive because they're drawn that way to preserve incumbency.
And, I mean, the legislature is really kind of the heart of our governing system.
It absolutely is, and frankly just hasn't functioned the way that it was intended to function. And this is one way of righting that wrong.
We're speaking with Lori Lightfoot. She's a partner at Meyer Brown. She's also an attorney for the Independent Maps Amendment, and they'll be filing their first response to the lower court ruling with the Illinois Supreme Court by the end of this week. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this Sunday morning. Enjoy the weather now before the steam heat kicks in. It's 7:47 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me here is Lori Lightfoot. She's a partner at Meyer Brown, independent maps attorney. We're talking about the decision last week on the circuit level that ruled that Citizens Initiative, which got 560-some thousand signatures. The judge ruled that she did not believe it met the constitutional short window for making the ballot on November 8th. The Illinois Supreme Court on Friday accepted a quick direct appeal on this. And quickness is very important here.
It is. We have a kind of looming deadline of August 26th, which is the date by which the state board needs to certify to the county boards what the ballot in November will look like. And that's as a result of some federal litigation from several years ago. The big important point about that is that the ballots that need to be sent out to our military
overseas ballots, right.
Now, look, the reality is if the court gets to August 26th and isn't ready, the court obviously can impose a new deadline. And frankly, the federal ballot could be separated out from the state ballot. But we're hoping, frankly, that the aggressive briefing schedule that we have proposed, the court will hear the case, give us plenty of time to brief it, and then render a decision before August 26th.
Now, I'm not the lawyer here. I don't even play one. But you can't go beyond the scope of what the trial court pleadings were, can you?
No, the record is what the record is. But at the Supreme Court, they will hear the case, and the standard of review is called de novo, which means because it's a pure question of law, they can start from scratch. They don't have to give any deference to the circuit court opinion. They can start again and come up with different concepts.
But as both sides here, you can't bring in new issues. And the reason I ask that is because we have the People's Map Group, which is, that's the group that's fighting this, and they're represented by Mike Casper,
yes,
who's a very good attorney,
he's
a longtime Democratic Party legal counsel and ally, mm-hmm, of Mike Madigan. But the argument that the People's Maps Group makes in its public statements, mm-hmm, is that they believe that this is a denial or could lead to a denial of minority representation.
Well, let's talk about the People's Maps. This is a party that's required to make filings with the State Board of Election about what money they spend. They've just come through what had to have been an expensive piece of litigation, and yet they've never filed to say that they have they've taken any money, that they've spent any money.
They filed. But it says $0.
But it says zero. There's nothing referenced, and even in kind, what we would call as lawyers pro bono legal services. So I think we ought to have view with what they say with some suspicion. But the issue that they raise, which is really the ultimate red herring, that somehow this amendment would deny minorities rights. Well, I'm African American. I'm not going to support something that would even remotely have the residual effect of affecting adversely minority rights. But what our amendment does is it elevates the protection of minority rights to the Constitution. And that doesn't exist now. It's merely a statute. It could change. It could be altered. Courts could interpret it different ways. We raise this issue to a constitutional provision that can't be easily changed. Secondly, if you look at the content of the amendment, one of the first things that the amendment says is it's got to be compliant with federal law. There's a whole body of federal law about protecting minority rights, and then we reinforce it by having specific provisions in the amendments that, again, reinforce that minority rights need to be protected. So if you actually look at the amendment itself, what we're proposing to do vis-a-vis minority rights, this argument by this group of folks, I'll call them, it's just preposterous, and it's meant to fearmonger and folks and hope that nobody actually looks at the amendment. But the amendment itself goes out of its way to ensure that minority rights are going to be respected and protected. And frankly, the way in which the commissioners would be selected also, frankly, reinforce certainly much more than happens now, that minorities will actually sit on that commission. That's certainly been the experience of California and Arizona, which are the models from which this amendment are drawn. So up and down the board, this argument that minority rights are not going to be protected, and I'll say it politely, is just nonsense.
Well, and that was not even part of the pleadings.
No, it's not. It's totally outside of the record.
That's why I was asked the question.
So
it can't even be brought up.
It can't be brought up. And frankly, had they put it into the record, we would have had the arguments that we had now, and that would have been a dead bang loser for them. They know that this is specious. This is about protecting the power of the entrenched forces in Springfield.
So the fact that it's de novo, everybody gets to start over.
Yep.
But does that change your pleadings in this?
No, I don't think it fundamentally changes our pleadings. We're obviously going to be focused on pointing out why it is that we think that the court this time got it wrong.
The trial court.
Yeah, and frankly, what we're also going to be saying is, you know, from 2 years ago, Judge Mikva, a lot of the arguments that this court embraced were arguments that were also before Judge Mikva, which she rejected. So we have, it's not quite a circuit split as we think about it in kind of appellate parlance, but we have two circuit court decisions that come to fundamentally different conclusions on really basically the same issues. So we'll be pointing out that conflict and then telling the court, of course, why we think that as a matter of law, this amendment is on all fours with what the 1970 framers had intended. Now, the other issue that should be clear is there really is no precedent for a redistricting initiative. The Supreme Court has opined in other circumstances, either things that dealt specifically with the changing of legislative districts, but this is really going to be an issue of first impression for them. So,
because they did not get the case 2 years ago,
no.
And part of the reason was there were questions about
the signatures
and the cost of appealing on something that even if they had won at the court level, they didn't have the signatures to qualify for the ballot.
Right. Now, the big threshold is making sure you get over the signature hurdle, which our folks kind of blew through that hurdle. They didn't even get contested at the state board level, and it was a very quick certification.
And again, here, as I mentioned, even despite Judge Larson's ruling, she says redistricting is certainly meets that structural and procedural argument. 2 years ago, so did Judge Mikva. She said the same thing.
Yes.
She even said, of the two, and there were two issues before then, mm-hmm. It was the term limits
right.
issue as well as redistricting. And she said, of the two, certainly redistricting is one that appears to meet and you know, provided kind of a guideline
yes.
for it.
Well, and Judge Mikva also. The arguments about the role of the Auditor General and the Supreme Court and the Attorney General, those were issues that were before Judge Mikva, and she said that's not a problem. That does not present a constitutional barrier for this amendment going forward. Now, Judge Larson has taken a different view. So, obviously, we favor the reading by Judge Mikva, but ultimately, it's critically important for the Supreme Court to decide this issue. Because, frankly, clearly, this is now the third or fourth of these initiatives that have been tried since 2008. There's a big desire on the part of the populace, really all across the state, for change, and this is one of the vehicles for that. The people need some guidance from the Supreme Court. Millions of dollars have been spent. Lots of people hours have been spent trying to get this thing positioned to be on a ballot, and we really need some guidance from the court. And obviously, we're interested in the court coming down and sanctioning our amendment and then letting the people decide. There's still yet another hurdle. Even if the court says this passes constitutional muster and the State Board of Elections certifies it, we still have to get a substantial number of people who show up to vote in favor of this amendment, but we're ready to make that argument to the people.
And as I said, it's a very complicated amendment.
Because
we're talking about changing the Constitution and its language,
yes.
And it has to be done in language. And as I recall, it feels like one 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper in agate type.
Yes.
But if it does, and this is something I wonder too, if it does qualify. Say if you win, proposed constitutional amendments, Secretary of State's office traditionally does a mailing that's kind of a pro and
right.
a con.
Yes.
Does that happen with the citizens initiative?
Yeah, so what we expect, and I think we've already done this, is we have to kind of put in a shorthand paragraph on what the amendment proposes to do. There's an opportunity for somebody opposing it to it. So far, that hasn't happened. Nothing's come out of the legislature on that. And frankly, the deadline may have passed at this point. But the on the ballot itself, in addition to a mailer, there'll be a shorthand blurb explaining what the amendment proposes to do.
Lori, I want to switch gears briefly in just a couple of seconds we have left. You're head of the Police Accountability Task Force, and you had been concerned about a lack of public hearings on what's going on. And we have the announcement now that we're going to have some community hearings mm-hmm. on what's going on. Mm-hmm. You have to feel good about that.
Yes, but with qualifications.
Okay.
Right? What we heard from the mayor on Friday, I believe, was that the intent is to introduce an ordinance at the September City Council meeting that will at least take on two issues. One is a replacement for IPRA and also public safety IG. I think those are very good issues that really do need to be kind of accelerated ahead of anything else. What we've said, though, is not just public hearings where people can come and kind of vent their spleen, but public input, mm-hmm. a community-led process. So I think a second part of that is, particularly with the Citizens Oversight Board, that a group of community groups are going to take that question and probably others and take that out to the community and vet that further. What I think we're most interested in is making sure that whatever legislation happens has the full vetting of the community, subject matter experts, of which there are many in Chicago. There are many groups and individuals that have been working on these issues literally for decades.
Well, since trust is the whole key.
It is. And you know, we've said this before, if the process and the content of the legislation hasn't involved people outside of the fifth floor and a small handful of city council members, it'll be DOA. It will have no legitimacy, and it will be a lost opportunity that, frankly, we can't afford to lose. So I hope that there will still be an openness on the part of the mayor's office and the city council to involve subject matter experts. We haven't seen that quite yet, but there's time for that to happen.
Lori Lightfoot, partner at Meyer Brown, attorney for Independent MAPS, and also head of the Police Accountability Task Force. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's my pleasure to be here.
We'll be back with more right after this.